Good Erev Shabbos, everybody. We are up to, with Hashem's help, session number 9, the 9th shiur in this series that we call the Chasson Shmooz, You Wish You Had, But Never Had. Very quickly, I want to review some of the important things to keep in mind as you're going through this shiur. Number one, who's ever listening to these recordings should listen from beginning to end. It should be in sequential order. Each shiur builds on the next. Second very important point is to understand that although I am sharing with you whatever I was able to understand from my learning and my studies, I'm not a posek, and so these are ideas to take up for further study and exploration. They're not piskei halacha. It's also important, again, to acknowledge that we're speaking about things that normally are not spoken about publicly. It's really not the normal practice of tznius to speak about these things, but clearly for persons who have been exposed to so much worse than Torah thoughts about sexuality, it's important to have a good understanding and to be able to get questions answered and ideas presented with the positive ways of living a Torah life and being a sexual person. So that's why it's important to do this. If anybody has any questions, again, they are free to text me at 718-793-1376. That's 718-793-1376. Or email simchafeuerman@gmail.com, SIMCHAFEUERMAN@gmail.com. One last point, which is that as we get deeper into these things and we're speaking in some ways very frankly about sexuality and also encouraging people who would like to have meaningful and complete sexual life with their spouses, it's going to put people in touch with sexual feelings. And it's complex because sexual feelings are normal and Torah expects us to work with them in appropriate ways, as we're going to discuss. But for persons that are addicts or have difficulty with compulsive sexual behavior, each person is going to have to work out for themselves with ma'ozne sichwa, with the scales of justice, with their own good judgment, to figure out what's really a trigger and what's not. And I mentioned last week, and I will just say very briefly again, the Rambam in Hilchos Deos in Perek Beis, Halacha Aleph, talks about how just as someone who's sick and unwell, sometimes bitter food tastes sweet and sweet food tastes bitter, and sometimes normally medicine that would be harmful is helpful when you're sick, and some things that normally are helpful or healthful are harmful when you're sick. It's also true with Cholei HaNefesh. And so normal discussions about sexuality and about needs and desire, which is very appropriate, could be a problem for somebody who has issues and challenges in that regard. And each person really has to be intelligent and use their seichel and their good judgment and to be honest with themselves about what they're doing. Okay, so last week we began a very complicated sugya that has many nuances to it, and we're going to continue with it this week, and it may take even more than this week. I'm not yet sure how much ground we will cover, but the essential issue that we were grappling with last week was, we know, we've seen many times, brought down in Chazal, it's very clear that it's a man's responsibility to give his wife attention, affection, and even sexual pleasure. And in prior shiurim, we discussed many makaris that were quite explicit about that requirement and that need. And the question is that would be running through many people's minds is, what about the man's pleasure? What is the role of the man's pleasure? Is it considered his right? Is it an option? Is it something to have disdain for? So that's a very big question, and there are many contradictory representations in Chazal about what is the man's proper hanhaga regarding his own pleasure and what's his wife's responsibility regarding giving him pleasure. And we started to talk about that last week. It's also interesting to note, and it tells you a great deal, every language carries the culture of the people. Whatever language you use, the language itself teaches people how to think and gives them ways to think. So, for example, if you were, an Eskimo, as I understand it, although I'm not an Eskimo, but as I understand it, the Inuit have many, many, many words for snow, because snow for them is also ground. Snow for them is also a building material. When we think of snow, we think of snowballs and getting off from school and snowmen. But Eskimos think of all kinds of things, and so they have many words for snow. I guess wet snow and light snow and dirty snow or whatever it may be. So it's interesting to note that in Lashon Kodesh, there is no word for fun. There's no word for fun. There is a word for joy and happiness, sasoin, simcha, gila, rina, but not just plain hedonistic fun. And it's very telling that in modern Hebrew, the word for fun is kef. Now, kef is not a Hebrew word. Kef is an Arabic word. So the Israelis, as clever as Ben Yehuda was, and he developed the Hebrew dictionary, the modern Hebrew dictionary, they couldn't find a word in Hebrew for fun, and they had to borrow from the Arab neighbors. So kef is essentially a foreign concept to the whole Jewish culture, the idea of just hedonistic fun. It's an interesting point. If you want to hear something a little optimistic as well, my father pointed out to me that there is no Hebrew word for fail, as in to not succeed. In modern Hebrew, people use words like nichshal or kishalon, but that actually means to stumble. And that's really fascinating, because to stumble is a lot different than to fail, right? To stumble means that a person lose their way, or to make a mistake is ta'ut, which means really to slant in one direction or the other. A person could get off course, but they can always recover. And the word recovery is very telling of the essential meaning. So one recovers from a mistake. One recovers from a stumbling, from a kishalon. When one fails, it's very hard to recover. And indeed, in studies of addiction, just by the way, in studies of addiction, it seems to be the key issue is not the relapse. The key issue is the recovery from the relapse. So would it only be that an alcoholic would, let's say, have a bad night and have a bunch of drinks, or a sex addict would have a bad night and end up doing certain averas? Would it only be that then the next day they'd wake up and be back on track? Oftentimes with addicts, that's not the case. It's very, very difficult for them to recover once they fall. And it may very well be conceptually that they see themselves as a failure instead of stumbling. But anyway, check it out, folks. There is no Hebrew word for fail, but there's also no Hebrew word for fun. So anyway, that was a bit of a digression, but I thought a very relevant digression for people that are in recovery. And again, I can't go through the content of last week's shiur fully, but I do think it's important to pick up from Shulchan Aruch and Or HaChaim, Siman Resh Mem, Sif Aleph. And the first part that we spoke about was that Shulchan Aruch seems to be pretty clear about two things. Despite the fact that the Gemara in Nedarim on Chaf Amud Beis seems to say that the halacha is like the Rabbanan and not like, quote, the Malachi Asharis, which we're not going to explain that term in today's shiur, and that really essentially one could be with his wife in any which way that he pleases, which is the way the Gemara seems to conclude. Shulchan Aruch says that one should not engage in a lot of sexuality because it creates more taiva. And he describes that although a man has an obligation to please his wife and must please her at the appropriately regulated intervals, and at different times, like mikveh night or before a man is going away, or there are, when he sees that his wife in some way is hinting that she's desirous, Shulchan Aruch says that a man should minimize his pleasure. And now we continue with even stronger language. We're in the middle of Aruch Chaim, Siman Reish Mem, and the Mechaber says, Af kashu motzi etzla, even when he's with her, l'ichavan lahana also, he should not intend his own pleasure. Ela ka'odam shepareach oval, just like a person that's fulfilling an obligation. Shehu chayiv ba'oin also, he has an obligation to give her affection and to give her sexual attention. V'lekayim mitzvah boro, and to fulfill the mitzvah of his creator, shehiyu lo bonim oskim b'Torah, so that he'll have children who are engaged in Torah, and mekayimei mitzvahs b'Yisrael, and fulfill the mitzvahs. Then he says, v'cheinim chavan latikun avlad, let's say his wife is pregnant, so it's understood that being sexual with the wife during pregnancy is actually helpful to the child, especially in the last 6 months, it's good for the child. So that's also good. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, and by the way, this is all based on the Sefer Bali and Nefesh of the Ravid, which we'll have a chance to look at in greater depth a little later, or maybe in a different shir. But Shulchan Aruch says, if those kavanas don't work for you, then if his intention is to, in some way, work with his taiva so that he will not have a desire to sin, he sees that his desire is beginning to get the better of him, and he's desirous, then that's also an acceptable kavana, acceptable, right? Not considered his right or something that he should necessarily seek out, but acceptable. Shulchan Aruch says, Ramah adds, Gambaze yesh kibol sachar, that is also something that's merit-worthy, and he'll get reward for that, says the Ramah. Ach yoser tov, hoyel alichos es yitzro, but the better choice would be for him to push away his yetzer hara, volichbosh oso, and conquer it. Ke'ever katan yesh ba'adam. This is based, I think, on a Gemara in Sanhedrin, because a man has a small limb. Mar ivo savea mazbio roev. If he satisfies it, it is starved. But if he starves it, then it is satisfied. So Shulchan Aruch is saying that even though it's permitted to engage in sexuality with the intent of sating one's desire and being able to deal with one's desire in a permitted fashion, he's saying the ideal is really to somehow have more control over the yetzer. He goes on to say, "Av mishein utzarech ledavar," and then he goes on to say, but if a person engages in sexuality and there's no need for it, he has no desire. And of course he sees that his wife doesn't, for whatever reason, need it at that time. And only he's ma'orah tavoso, k'day l'malos tavoso, he's just doing it in order to fulfill his desire, to arouse his desire. And fulfill his desire, he atzas ha'yetzer. That is the counsel of the evil inclination. U'menaheter yisisano elo iser. And he will go from what's permitted to what's forbidden. Well, that's the unmanageability of trying to satisfy desire. This is what Chazal warned, that a person should not intentionally arouse himself, and we won't go into all the details over there. Now, so far again, Shulchan Aruch is coming out pretty strongly on the side of abnegation, on the side of denying one's pleasure, as a last resort. If there's no other way to deal with one's desire, then it's permitted. But certainly, it seems to be from Shulchan Aruch that to just simply want to engage in sexuality and indulge in that pleasure, not for the sake of satisfying one's wife, is quite frowned upon. Of course, we're not finished with this. There's a lot to talk about and a lot of nuances, but that's what Shulchan Aruch says so far. And then if you go to Sif Ches, again, in Simen Reish Mem in Arachayim, he goes on to say, V'yishamish be'emu v'yira, and one should engage in intercourse with fear. Kamosha Amru al Rabbi Lezer, like I said about Rabbi Lezer, Shaymagala tefach u'machasa tefach, that he only revealed the tefach and covered up a tefach. There's different explanations of what that means, but essentially he was very, very modest in how he engaged in the act. And this, by the way, again, the Gemara Nedarim says the halacha was not like him, but Shulchan Aruch is following Rabbi Lezer, and V'doma k'misha kafo shed, and he should engage in the act as if he's forced by a demon, which again is the lashon of the Gemara there in Nedarim. And Shulchan Aruch explains, Pirish be'emu v'yira, k'ilo kafo shed. He just does it with fear. V'yesh meforshim, megal tefach, v'chasa tefach. He goes into different explanations, but I can tell you all of them are about limiting the man's pleasure and engaging in the act with a great deal of tznius and modesty. Okay, so that's the Shulchan Aruch, and his position is quite strong in that direction. So, what happened to the Gemara and the Nedarim that says the halacha is not like the Malachi Asharis? What's going on there? So we have a lot to study about this, and we will not get to it all today. I will say this. If you're an Ashkenazi, the final word belongs to the Ramah. Now, the Ramah in Ibn Ezer, Simon Chafhei, Halacha Beis, Sif Beis, he adds an important point. He adds a gloss onto what Shulchan Aruch says. And even though he, in Arachayim, in Simon Reish Mem, does not comment on Shulchan Aruch, because the basic understanding is that the Ramah definitely agreed with the Shulchan Aruch that it is laudable, that it is praiseworthy to take that approach towards sexuality, meaning doing it for the mitzvah and minimizing one's pleasure, even though that is laudable, and in that way the Ramah agreed with the Mechaber, but the Ramah makes a very clear statement. And Ibn Ezer, Simon Chafei, Sif Beis, and he says, V'yachol la'asos em ishto ma'asha yirtza, a man could do with his wife as he desires. Bo'el b'chol eisha yirtza, he can engage in intercourse at any time that he wants. Of course, this means with the appropriate pious, with the appropriate engagement with the wife and foreplay, because in the halacha it's forbidden to force a woman into being sexual. So that's a whole different story. But he means that when he wants, umanashib chol evi shiyirtze, and he could even kiss any part of the body that he wishes, ubala bein kadarka bein shlo kadarka, and he could engage in sexuality, whether it is regular intercourse or even shloka darka, which means anal intercourse, derech evarim, or he even could in some way have his body and the parts of his body with her in any which way he wants, even if it's not intercourse. Uvavash lo yotzizer levatala. However, one thing, he has to be careful that he does not let the zera come out in vain. And in this case, the definition of the zera coming out in vain would be not in the act of intercourse. So, meaning the man could do whatever he wants, touch whoever he wants, engage with her in any kind of activity that he wants, so long as the end result, the ultimate being mosi zera, happens inside the woman. That's what he first says, and then he goes on to say, and it's based on a Tosus in Yevamos, He goes on to say, "V'yesh mekilin v'omrim shemotah shelo kadarka, afilum hotzi zera im osa ba'akroi ve'ena rago b'kach." Goes on to say that some people say shelo kadarka, that anal intercourse is permitted, even if he does it, even if he's motzi zera, as long as it's ba'akroi, as long as it's in passing. That this comes from the Ri. Regarding this Tosos and Yevamos, and it's based on how to understand the Gemara over there. But the point is that the reason why it's permitted by Akroi is the way the reformulates it is that the Re holds that it's really not Zera Levatola when it's done within the context of intimacy between husband and wife. But there's a problem. The problem is that if it's with an intention to not get pregnant, that either at least is a bit lasse, and it's quite possibly makes the act then into an act of zera levatola because it's purposefully to not let her get pregnant. And that's why he says bakroi, meaning if on occasion the person has some desire to be with his wife in a different than usual way, and since Bia Shloka Darka is still considered Bia, and he's Mazria in that way, it's not considered Zera Levatala because he's not doing it as part of a systematic way of not getting pregnant. That's why Bakroi. Now, there's other Pshat in Bakroi, but that's a simple Pshat in Bakroi, and it's the most sensible one. So that's why Bakroi is permitted, because it's not part of a consistent pattern of trying to avoid pregnancy. But if it was part of a consistent pattern to avoid pregnancy, then it would render it Levatala. Anyway, that's what the Ramah says, for whatever reason. And he says that there's such an opinion. And he goes on to say, he goes on to caution, Afal Pisha Motor B'chol Eila, even though that is permitted, all these things are permitted as described, called Hakadish Asmo Bamutalo Kadosh Yomrulo. Anybody who makes himself more holy by making Gedarim, by accepting upon himself willingly more restrictions, we will say that he is holy. Velo Yarba Batashmish Lios Mutli Eslatamid, he should not have a lot of Tashmish to be with her constantly. This is very disgraceful, and it's considered the way of a boor is a loathsome, undeveloped person, a real, you know, just an empty person. Whoever is able to limit the amount of intercourse they have, that is to be praised. But he has to always make sure that he is taking care of his wife and she's not feeling denied. And then he goes on to say, again, even though all that's permitted, even the Ramah is saying that when he's engaged in intercourse, he should not have in mind his own pleasure. Just how he's doing in order to fulfill his obligation. And he goes on to say, Lo yivo elo meritzona, he only should have intercourse with her consent. Vim eina marutza yifaisena asha tisratza. And if she doesn't want, he should appease her until she wants. Vietznuo ma'od b'shas tashmish, he should be very, very tznius when he engages in the act of Tashmish. Okay, so what have we got so far? We have right now, we've got the Mechaber and the Ramah that seem to make unqualified statements that it is far, far preferred to deny one's pleasure, to limit one's pleasure. The only person whose pleasure really counts is the woman's pleasure. That's what's coming across very clearly. The Ramah nods to the Gemara, that after all, the Gemara in the Dharma is very clear that the halacha is not like Rebbe Lazar, and the halacha is like the Chachamim. And so the Ramah says, technically, one can do whatever he wants with his wife, again, with her permission, but one really can do whatever he wants with his wife, and it almost includes anything, so long as he's not motzi zera levatola. And even that, the definition of motzi zera levatola is a little bit open for discussion, as we spoke about. I don't want to go over it again, but you can look it up over there in Eben Ezer Simen Chaf Hei. But that's all technically was permitted, but certainly not the Torah way. So we need to understand a lot more about this, because in order to understand what's going on here, we would have to understand what is the end game. What is Chazal's end game? What is the Torah's understanding of sexuality and its purpose? That, on the one hand, it seems a man really shouldn't have a lot of pleasure, and on the other hand, the woman's supposed to have pleasure. What's that all about? What's going on there? Wouldn't it make more sense to say the man is obligated to please the woman and the woman's obligated to please the man? And, you know, leave it at that. So we need to understand what's the end game, what's the purpose of intercourse. It's certainly not just for reproduction, because it's a mitzvah to engage in intercourse when your wife is pregnant. It's a mitzvah to engage in intercourse when your wife is no longer able to have children. So what is the end game of intercourse? And that's something that in the next year we're going to have a chance to talk about in greater depth, as we see some more views. We will study the Ramban in Igeres HaKodesh, we'll study the Ravid and many other sources to understand. And eventually, and that's why you really have to stay tuned, so it's going to be a long week for some of you if you take everything in the Shiurim very seriously, because it's a real cliffhanger. But what is the Torah going to expect from us in an ideal sense, and what's that all about? And then, you know, what's a reasonable and practical and Jewish way, you know, to walk with God in this practice, in this kind of way of serving God? How do you do it? How do you do it in a good way? How do you do it in a reasonable way? How do you deal with your desires? So we will learn more next week about this as we study the sources more deeply. I'm going to shut off the recording and open it up to questions. Hold on a moment.